If you were a fan of YA fantasy in the early 2000s, chances are you know who Robert Stanek is. He's a best-selling author who works in numerous genres, from his award-winning Bugville Critters series of picture books for toddlers, to spy thrillers, to sci-fi, to historical fiction set in eras ranging from Belle Époque Paris to 1980s Wisconsin. But for most of his career, he's been best known for his high fantasy series set in a mystical world known as Ruin Mist. Like many other iconic fantasy series, such as Discworld, the Ruin Mist books share the same settings and some of the same characters, but can mostly be read in any order. Stanek's publisher, Reagent Press, recommends kids start with The Kingdoms and the Elves of the Reaches, and adults start with Keeper Martin's Tale, while also noting for the past 20 years that the Ruin Mist books are their number one best-selling titles. Ruin Mist was a big deal, as you probably remember. Keeper Martin's Tale was the number one fantasy of the year in 2002 and floated around Amazon's top 50 charts for half the year. Back then, Amazon sold almost exclusively books, that's what they were originally founded to be, an online bookseller. People kept discovering Ruin Mist for a few years after that. Keeper Martin's Tale was voted a top 10 fantasy of 2004 as well, and in 2005, Stanek won the Best New Voice in Fantasy Award, although presumably a lot of people complained that at that point, Stanek was hardly a new voice. He was hugely mainstream, celebrating over $100 million in book sales by 2005, almost unheard of for an author who had only been well-known for a few years. While the publishing industry is surprisingly chaotic, and it's very difficult to even measure who the highest earning authors are, this most likely puts Stanek in the top 50 best-selling English language authors of all time, a rise that, in terms of earning that much in that little time, overtakes the likes of Stephanie Meyer and Rick Riordan, and pulls roughly even with Dan Brown and Suzanne Collins. And all four of those people made plenty of their money from movie adaptations of their work, but there's never been a movie based on a Robert Stanek novel, so this is arguably even more impressive. Understandably, Hollywood did try. Also in 2005, there's a forum thread where fans excitedly discussed rumors that Lucasfilm, or possibly a Japanese director, had purchased the rights to Ruin Mist. For whatever reason, that never happened. It's just an expensive undertaking to make a high fantasy movie, I guess. Maybe the studios decided that in the 2000s, with Harry Potter and Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings, audiences were too saturated with big-budget fantasy epics for there to be a third major Castles and Dragons franchise. Okay, so now you're probably thinking, wait, yeah, why haven't I heard of this guy? Or you might be like, Tor, this had better not be another one of your misinformation episodes. It's not. I promise I won't do another one of those till it's April 1st again. Or you read this episode's title and correctly predicted that the other shoe is about to drop. I'm your host, Tor Parsons. These are my co-hosts, Jollibee the Durian and Husalino the Capybara. Thimble will be back from her fact-finding mission at the end of this week, and welcome to Tor's Cabinet of Curiosities. Okay, before we get into the meat of the episode, a while ago I promised that I would start doing a lie of the week in each of my episodes, because there's a channel on the Tor's Cabinet Discord called Lies that is just for lies. I have not done a lie of the week in weeks, so to make up for that, I'm going with a couple lies here. This one actually is from this week. This one is very relevant. Nargle Fargle says, in a surprising turn of events, Jollibee has been chosen as the new pope. His first act as leader of the Catholic Church will be to turn the Vatican into the world's largest ska venue. Thank you, Nargle Fargle. Very good lie. It was actually already predicted in the comments to my Pope Joan video way back when. And this one is from quite a while ago, but let me see if I can find it. I love this one so much. All right, yeah, this one's really good.
In 2003, the Duran Duran LP had a limited release in East Asia titled Duran Duran in an attempt to bank on the rising sales of Western music in the provinces. While it's claimed as many as 500,000 were exported for sale, music historians have only found a surviving handful of copies, all of which are in poor condition due to water damage. It's theorized that an incident in the Suez Canal around that time resulted in the containers all becoming heavily waterlogged and disposed of as unfit for sale. The album was later recalled after claims the incident was an attempt to claim on marine cargo insurance, and the band settled out of court. The durian on the cover was only recently rediscovered in 2023 in Guangzhou South Station. Its piercing features eroded after 20 years of being a display piece at a fruit stand were restored to its original appearance upon being smuggled back to the West in an unaccounted for checked bag.
This is now the official unofficial origin story for Jollibee. Thank you, Moonsider, for coming up with this lie. I also, you know, that this isn't really the purpose of the Lies channel. It's more for lies like the latter two, but, like, I love this Spiro Agnew alternate history. It definitely tickles my alt-hist interest. I have a lot of travel coming up as well, so unfortunately this will be my last Tuesday episode for quite a while. We're moving, unfortunately, with a heavy heart, to a weekly schedule. Tours Cabinet episodes will be on Friday alone from here on out. William Robert Stanek is a family man living in Olympia, Washington. He served in the Gulf War and received the Distinguished Flying Cross, one of his rare achievements that has been corroborated by outside sources and is almost definitely true. He publishes Microsoft manuals under his first name, William, which is probably his real job and main source of income. Here, he's claimed to be Microsoft Press's top technical author for nearly 20 years and is widely recognized as one of the world's leading authorities in Microsoft technologies. And even though the internet is full of claims like this about Stanek that pretty clearly aren't true, I think this is true, because it's not coming from one of Stanek's websites. This is on the page for Pearson Publishing, one of the world's biggest publishers of textbooks and instruction manuals, which is the publisher for the Microsoft manuals credited to William Stanek. But clearly he's not satisfied with having a Distinguished Flying Cross and a magisterium of niche knowledge about turn-of-the-millennium operating systems. The Distinguished Flying Cross isn't the coolest military decoration you can get. It's awarded to almost everyone who flew planes in war for America at some point and then went on to some other notable achievement. Politicians ranging from George McGovern to Mark Kelly to Joe McCarthy of McCarthyism fame have DFCs. So do celebrities who fought in World War II. Gene Roddenberry, Clark Gable, and Jimmy Stewart. It's even possible Stanek got the DFC because he showed one of his old military higher-ups one of his many websites asserting he's a globally recognized author, and Sarge was like, "I don't read much, I had no idea," and believed him. As for being one of the world's leading authorities in Microsoft technologies, that's like being world-famous in New Zealand. You can get a polite nod for saying that at a party. Women don't throw themselves at you, not like they do if you're a best-selling fantasy author. Clearly, what William Robert Stanek wants to be known for are his works of fiction, published under his middle name. In the early 2000s, he was intent on making Ruin Mist the next Middle-earth. Most of his books were written before AI even knew what words were, so Occam's Razor says he really did write almost all the things published under his name. And the elaborate fake world he's built, in which his books are beloved bestsellers, is perhaps without comparison anywhere on the internet. This whole section of the video comes from the work of a different intrepid internet investigator, someone who I've tried to contact several times without success. This is a blog called Conjugal Felicity, dedicated to ripping apart terrible self-published novels. It was run by one person, I think, and was most active around 2011, 2012, but soldiered on with posts becoming less and less frequent until it disappeared off the internet around 2022. Today, it's only accessible on the Wayback Machine. This episode wouldn't be possible without the in-depth research on this blog, and if the person behind Conjugal Felicity wants to come out of the woodwork and offer me proof that they were the one who did this research, I have money with your name on it. Not a lot, but some. So, the number one way Robert Stanek describes himself is as a best-selling author. It says that on the cover of most of his books. He jumps around about what this means. A New York Times best-selling author? That's what people in America tend to assume best-selling means, but that's an easily searchable database and no Stanek book has ever appeared there. Nor, to my knowledge, has Stanek ever specifically claimed to be a New York Times best-selling author, although if he was running the sales numbers he said he was in the 2000s, he probably would have topped those charts a few times. He has directly claimed to be an Amazon best-selling author, but that's also an easily searchable database, and from the rankings of his books on Amazon, if they're best-selling, they sure must be selling, well, somewhere other than Amazon. As of 2010, Keeper Martin's Tale, the purported number one fantasy of 2002, was doing numbers on Amazon that suggested, quote, perhaps a single inventory slash consignment copy has been ordered. Wait, didn't Stanek's publisher, Reagent Press, say the Ruin Mist books are their number one bestsellers? Yes, they are, because Reagent Press is a vanity publisher owned by Robert Stanek, and it exclusively publishes books that are either by Stanek or probably Stanek writing under a pseudonym. Technically, then, Stanek's claim that some of his books are bestsellers is the truth, just like how there's one type of nuclear weapon that's the least destructive. Conjugal Felicity then took the impressive step of searching for Stanek's books in the inventory catalogs of libraries in most of America's major cities, proving that America's biggest libraries mostly don't have a single copy of anything by him. But let's back up and talk about Amazon. Because even though we've pretty much already exposed the bestseller claim as a lie, which should put a healthy amount of suspicion on everything else surrounding Stanek's books, we haven't gone far down the rabbit hole of Stanek world quite yet. Even though almost nobody seemed to be buying the Ruin Mist novels, it sure looked like the people who did liked them a lot. Sure, it's not super rare for a book with very few sales to have a freakishly high star rating because, like, one person liked it and gave it 5 stars, but this isn't the case with Stanek's books. This isn't a situation of small sample size. For all their popularity or lack thereof, they had a lot of reviews on Amazon. Hundreds. Long, detailed reviews that made them some of the best reviewed books on Amazon with over 100 reviews. That's how a lot of people first found out about Robert Stanek. Look at this! This is the percentage of reviews of Stanek's books that gave them either 4 or 5 stars compared to other fantasy novels and bestsellers from around that time. And you can go into the Wayback Machine and look at the Ruin Mist books on Amazon, and you'll see those reviews. Here's the page for In the Service of Dragons, as it was in 2007. We've got one negative review up top here, but that's one of the only ones. Glowing reviews that don't really say much other than repeating how much they like the book. This Joy Nadel from Kentucky likes the originality of Stanek's ideas. Elves and humans aren't buddies, they're actually enemies. The world isn't the only world. There are doorways to other realms. Check out the reviews on the right, especially how much they mention Harry Potter. It's not Harry Potter and it's not meant to be. Better than Harry Potter! I have, unfortunately, read this book. It's not remotely similar to Harry Potter. It's worse, to be sure, but it's worse in the way licking a slug is worse than the movie Harold and Maude. Apples and oranges. To be fair, 2007 was the peak of Harry Potter mania, and absolutely everything for a YA audience got compared to Harry Potter for a while, even in professional reviews. Ready Player One got comparisons to Harry Potter, for God's sake, and they have nothing in common except that they're, like, books you can use as vampire garlic against blue sky users, I guess. But in the context of everything else, this is fishy. And Conjugal Felicity has the receipts. They opted to compare Stanek's reviews to the Amazon reviews for Brisinger by Christopher Paolini, from the same series as Aragon, another high fantasy series that was big around this time. Compared to Brisinger's reviews, Felicity found a few notable ticks. Comparisons to other successful fantasy novels, calling the author Mr. Stanek, and writing out entire book titles. Even though all the books in the Aragon series have one-word titles, and Stanek's book titles are huge mouthfuls like The Kingdoms and the Elves of the Reaches, Stanek's reviewers were still more likely to write the whole title out than Paolini's reviewers were. Okay, but if these are Stanek's sock puppets, shouldn't the smoking gun be if they only review Stanek's books? And a lot of them didn't. A lot of these people had reviewed other fantasy novels, real bestsellers, but here we come to the real heart of the con. This is how Stanek's business model worked. Book buyers on Amazon can list their favorite books on their profile. almost all of Stanek's reviewers had rated and reviewed Harry Potter and other top YA fantasy books and included them, alongside Stanek's books, on their list of favorites, creating a narrative that large numbers of people liked both Stanek and the bestsellers. And you know what it says at the bottom of an Amazon listing? Customers who bought this also bought. That was how Stanek gamed the algorithm, back in the days when the idea of gaming the algorithm was not in the public consciousness. It makes sense, I think, that Stanek's real source of income comes from writing Microsoft manuals, because he is fundamentally a computer guy. He's bad at writing, but he's great at understanding systems. But what about professional reviews? There's always professional reviews on the back of any legitimately published book. Conjugal Felicity went looking for those. They had a trail to follow. Stanek himself claimed three books had recommended the Rue and Mist novels. Felicity found them. One was simply a list of YA book series for school librarians to consider stocking on their shelves, and the person who compiled the list said they used Amazon for their search, so clearly that's how Stanek landed there. The other two were both bizarre New Age guides about how to literally talk to elves and fairies, and both of them mentioned Stanek's books on long lists of books with elves and fairies in them. None gave any kind of special recommendation to the books. Felicity searched further. Voya, a book review journal written by and for librarians, ran a glowing review of Keeper Martin's Tale, but anyone can submit a review to Voya, and this review includes several of Stanek's particular tics, like a comparison to Tolkien, so there's a strong chance this is another sock puppet. The Journal of Electronic Defense published a review of Stormjammers, Stanek's nonfiction memoir about his Gulf War experiences, which was mixed to positive. To this day, that might be the only real professional review, positive or negative, of Stanek's work out there. Publishers Weekly did mention Stanek and Rue and Mist in a 34-word, two-sentence tossed offline in a 2,000-word article from 2009, which seemed to be lightly mocking it, but Stanek seemingly thought it was the closest thing he was going to get to a professional review in a major industry publication and began spamming the claim that Publishers Weekly loved his books all over the internet, using various sock puppet accounts that all made the same specific spelling and grammar mistakes. We have not yet reached the bottom of Stanek's grift. See, there are many, many Rue and Mist books which purport to belong to multiple distinct series set in the same world. All right, sounds like a detailed, richly imagined world, right? Brandon Sanderson stuff? In fact, I think Brandon Sanderson is exactly the sort of person Robert Stanek wants people to think he is. Hugely successful author whose main work consists of multiple series set in the same shared high fantasy universe, has written other books in lots of varying genres and age levels, sold millions of copies, but he's never had a movie adaptation of his books, and if you're not a classic nerd who played D&D before 5e and stuff, chances are you really haven't heard of him. But Stanek's multiple series are more than meets the eye. Conjugal Felicity, bless them, went through bootlegged copies of each of them. Remember how Stanek's publishing website recommends kids start with Kingdoms and the Elves of the Reaches and adults start with Keeper Martin's Tale? Check this out. They are the same book. There are slight variations, slight as in the kids' version has its chapter titles written in Comic Sans, slight. Somewhat more unique is the Dark Path version, which Stanek claims is a retelling of the events of Keeper Martin's Tale from a different perspective. It's the same story too, albeit with slightly different phrasings, most likely an earlier draft. In the 2000s, Stanek was promoting his high fantasy series to cash in on Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings mania. In the 2010s, when a different high fantasy series reached mainstream popularity, Stanek retooled his same books a fourth time under suspiciously familiar yet stupider titles. A Clash of Heroes, A Dance of Swords, A Storm of Shields, yes, shields, and A Reign of Dragons. Okay, so now, Stanek thinks, he's got a lot of the things a real author would have. Claims of being a bestseller, good reviews by professionals, good reviews by ordinary readers. But what's something best-selling authors have that you can't really fake? Recognition from other best-selling authors. Naturally, Stanek tried to fake this too. When Stanek was first discovered by the writing community in the 2000s, they passed around this photo quite a bit. Stanek purports that this shows him and Redwall author Brian Jakes, yes, the guy's last name was pronounced Jakes, signing books together in 2005. Obviously, there was no evidence Stanek and Jakes ever made an official appearance together, and given what we already know about Stanek, it was unlikely, but Jakes died in 2011, right about when Conjugal Felicity did their investigation into Stanek, so they couldn't contact him to confirm anything. Take a gander at this photo. Do you see anything odd about it? Do you see Stanek's legs by chance? Because I don't. There was a widespread belief on 2000's fantasy writing forums that Stanek had photoshopped himself into this image. This made Stanek hopping mad, and in a sense, this was one of the few accusations levied against Stanek that didn't end up being true. He released more candid photos showing that he really did meet Brian Jakes in 2005, but he did mess with the original photo to make him seem more legit, just not in the way people originally thought. These two photos are obviously taken seconds apart. Stanek and, it seems, his kids are posing for a photo with Brian Jakes. There's a pile of trash on the table in front of Stanek. Why would he have that there, if he's signing books? So in the next photo, it's gone, and it's replaced by a thick paperback book over to the right, presumably one of Stanek's own books that he's signing for his legions of fans. The reflection of the trash on the table surface is still there. Stanek also later claimed he did a book signing tour with R.A. Salvatore, a pulp fantasy author best known for writing licensed Star Wars novels, passing off this photo as evidence. Salvatore got in contact with Conjugal Felicity and confirmed he had never heard of Robert Stanek. This is sad, you know? If you're gonna lie about your success as an author, at least claim you're doing book tours with, like, George R.R. Martin. Nothing against Star Wars novels, but why are you pretending to be equal in stature to someone who writes those? Reminds me of how George Santos lied about being on the Baruch College volleyball team. As John Oliver put it, lovely thing to be, insane thing to claim to be. Stanek wasn't done trying to claim famous authors loved his work, and his next grift along these lines was quite a bit cleverer and more insidious. In 2014, he published a dystopian series called This Mortal Coil, After the Machines, presumably realizing that fantasy had been surpassed in mainstream success by the teen dystopia craze. It featured these 8 reviews by, well, authors. Notice anything? There's the hallmarks of Stanek's sock puppets. He's always very open about the bandwagon he's trying to jump on, and this time it's the Hunger Games. But do you notice anything else? Do some of these names sound familiar? Like Emily Asimov? No, you're thinking of Isaac Asimov, one of the most influential sci-fi authors of all time. Emily Asimov is an author published by Reagent Press, therefore almost definitely a pseudonym for Robert Stanek, and has published such bestsellers as Interview with the Zombie. And in her author bio, she seems to be claiming to be Isaac Asimov's granddaughter without saying that outright. Double lawsuit time! How about Margaret Brown? Doesn't that name ring a bell? No, you're thinking of Margaret Wise Brown, who wrote Goodnight Moon. And Mary Osborne? No, you're thinking of Mary Pope Osborne, who wrote the Magic Treehouse series. Other than Emily Asimov, authors with all these names have published extremely simple children's picture books about animals and the alphabet and stuff, which I could throw together in a few minutes on Canva, through publishing companies called My World Books and Wonderful World Press, both of which have exclusively published those authors who have the same names as famous authors so that they can add credibility to Robert Stanek's Hunger Games cash-in. That is an impressive level of commitment. Well, Stanek can't get any more weird and obsessed, right? Oh, you sweet summer child. What's another thing star authors have? Fandoms of people who talk about their work. The golden age of Stanek's grifting coincided with the golden age of forums in the 2000s, so there should be a Robert Stanek fan forum, right? There is! There's the Robert Stanek message board, ruinmist.proboards.com. It has a ton of channels where you can do damn near anything related to Ruin Mist. Discuss series set in the Ruin Mist world that I'm not sure ever got released, and if they did, were probably a re-release of the existing books. Learn about Robert Stanek himself, share Ruin Mist fanfic and fan art, learn the chess-like game Stanek's characters play in Ruin Mist, Kingsmate, discuss rumors about Stanek, and even roleplay as the royal houses vying for control of Ruin Mist. And do people post on it? Back in the 2000s, they did, or more likely one person did, posing as many. It's one of the most surreal places I've ever encountered on the internet. Maybe Stanek paid multiple people to excitedly discuss his books. There's evidence that Stanek did have a few unironic fans, but a number you could probably count on one hand. Back before most review sites cottoned onto Stanek's scheme and mass-deleted all the reviews of his books, a few people in the writing blogs where I'm sourcing most of this claimed they saw a handful of negative reviews of some of Stanek's books that then concluded by recommending a different Stanek book, saying it was much better. Maybe this was a more sophisticated Stanek sock puppet tactic, but maybe it meant some people really enjoyed some of his books. One particular power user on the Stanek forums, Sparhawk, who is allegedly from Bulgaria, has sometimes been cited as Stanek's lone, true, and honest fan, but I don't think there's strong evidence he's not another sock puppet. Sparhawk does link to a pretty big, pretty active Bulgarian fantasy fandom website, which he implies he owns, but there's no real evidence he really does. The moderator of the Robert Stanek forum is a guy calling himself Shire Hobbit. We get it, Stanek, we know what you're a fan of. And threads tend to go like this. Shire Hobbit posts nothing, and a few other usual suspects, typically Huntress, Adrina Alder, and Sparhawk, respond with lots more nothing. There have been no posts in over a decade, and there were never more than, like, one thread on each book. A few times, the gang assembled for a discussion of a potential Ruin Mist movie, putting together a fan cast and brainstorming directors, complete with a fake newspaper article about how Ruin Mist was a surefire blockbuster. Which is honestly a fun and normal thing to fantasize about when you're a writer, just don't do it on a public forum through sock puppet fan accounts. One commenter on Conjugal Felicity tried to set up an account on the Robert Stanek forum but was told, "Sorry, you may not use the name Stanek in your username." Once they changed their username, the account was pending approval. It remained pending approval for years. Somehow, I don't think there's more than one real person on the Stanek forums. Are there other fan sites? Supposedly there are. The Stanek message boards include a page headlined Top 25 Fan Sites, which does the rare for Stanek feature of under-promising and over-delivering, serving up links to 34 fan sites instead. Most are dead GeoCities and Angel Fire pages. Some of them are Robert Stanek's own sites that don't pretend to be anything else. The ones that purport to be made by fans barely include any content, usually just a list of his books and single-sentence reviews. I like these two because this one has people ruin misting all over the place, and this one includes the phrase, complete scoop and poop. Stanek even incurred the wrath of Wikipedia, which is when you know you've really fucked up. When you fight Wikipedians, they will win. Wikipedians are the world's most devoted truth seekers. I don't think it's possible to be totally unbiased, but I also think saying that gets used as a license to be emotionally biased and see everything through an ideological lens, and it's good to strive to be less biased. That's what Wikipedia does better than any website or, I think, any pre-internet organization that has ever existed. Whereas Robert Stanek clearly bought into the claim that, oh, anyone can edit Wikipedia, right? And was in for a rude awakening when his creation of numerous pages for him and his books ran up against the real truth-seeking mission of Wikipedia. He even inserted a link to one of his books on the page for literacy. Wiki moderators put out an alert warning of Stanek's shenanigans, and all the pages were deleted and salted, meaning nobody can create them again. And that, ultimately, is the bottom line. If neither you nor any of your books have a Wikipedia page, even if nothing else up to this point had been suspicious, you are not a best-selling author. All right, so how bad can these books possibly be? If they've been flung out all over the internet and seem not to have gotten a single good review anywhere, what must Robert Stanek's writing be like? Well, I can tell you this. These books are weird. There's the typical bad attempted fantasy narrator voice, tired high fantasy tropes, stock characters, and wooden-sounding medieval dialogue, like you'd expect from like a teenager trying their hand at writing a fantasy story, but the Ruin Mist books are bad in a way that I find really unique. They just feel like nothing, like a snowflake on the tongue. What is the plot? Yeah. There are battles, but we don't really know what the stakes are. Quests we don't know the destination of. Character arcs of which we get just the beginning, just the middle, or just the end. It almost feels unfinished, like there's a bad cliche, but at least completed fantasy story somewhere, and we've just gotten our hands on all the even-numbered pages of the manuscript. The defining feature of Stanek's writing is dialogue that the characters are supposed to understand, but the reader doesn't and never gets explained to us. So much seems to be happening off-screen. Characters you've never met and never will get mentioned in people's dispatches from faraway places you know nothing about and never get visited in the main plot. That happens in Tolkien a bit, but there it really is to flesh out the richly imagined world and rarely carries important plot information. In Stanek, it's the main way the plot moves forward, and you have to intuit what's going on from these faint flashes of something big happening. I guess he's trying to go for naturalistic dialogue, the sort of conversations these characters, who already know all this stuff, would really be having. But it doesn't work. Keeper Martin, the title character of Keeper Martin's Tale, is actually a minor character, who is the House of Alder's official lore keeper. He doesn't have much of a role in the plot, but we're supposed to believe this is his story as in he wrote it. You know this because this is the drawing of Keeper Martin used in the book. The third-person omniscient narrator is meant to be thought of as Keeper Martin, so that, I guess, is why we don't get things explained to us. He's writing for people in his own world who already know about the broader magical history of Ruin Mist. And he wasn't there through most of the events in the books, so he's something of an unreliable narrator who presumably has an interest in making the House of Alder look good. It's kind of clever, and could potentially be pulled off well by a better author, especially if you were to write a parallel novel, like Stanek claimed he did, from a different POV. As it is, I don't know any other bad authors whose books are unreadable because they do too much showing and not enough telling, so at least Stanek's style is distinctive. TV Tropes has a page called Aerith and Bob, about how jarring it is to see fantasy character names juxtaposed alongside normal, familiar names. It's hard to avoid in most fantasy. Either you create names that are so weird no real character could ever have them, and that would jolt people out of the narrative, or you just give your characters names that your friends could have, and that would jolt people out of the narrative, so you've gotta strike some kind of balance. And if your book is set in a real historic era, well, some names stood the test of time and others didn't. For example, it would be perfectly realistic to write a book set in medieval England in which you have brothers named Æthelstan and Bob. Bob as a nickname for Robert goes back that far. Any novel not set in present-day America will probably end up being a bit Aerith and Bob, and that's okay. But it's also good to keep that TV Tropes page in mind to avoid the more egregious cases. I once read an actually published bad high fantasy novel in which there was a character named High Lord Kevin. Ruin Mist has a really serious case of Aerith and Bob. Our two main characters are Adrina, a princess who finds the royal life stifling and bristles at the expectations the court imposes on her, and Vilmos, a young elf on the run from the high priests for his illegal magical powers. Some characters have vaguely Japanese or Chinese names, like Midori and Chancellor Yi. And then, in the background, a struggle is occurring between the House of Alder and the House of Tyranth. You know you're the baddies when you have Tyrant in your name. And they have various kings. It's not clear who rules what, but the houses are headed up by guys named King Andrew, King Charles, and King Mark.
Oh, hi, Mark.
There are elves with names like Brother Leon, Brother Galen, and Brother Seth. Also, they use the title brother regardless of gender. Stanek sort of tried to create an idea that the elves have a different concept of gender than humans, which is interesting and fairly original for its time, but after clumsily introducing this in a paragraph of Vilmos's internal thoughts, it never gets followed again, and the remaining elves we meet are all clearly male or female. An elf named Seth is the chosen one and has to go on a quest. What does this mean? Yeah. Vilmos can do magic, but if he does too much magic, the Dark Lord will return, even though the Dark Lord perished more than a millennia ago. Singular millennia! We learn that, quote, elf-kind mating instinct often skips a generation, so sometimes entire generations of elves are asexual. See if you can spot the critical world-building error here. I wonder if I could convince Stanek to appear in a PSA warning that you can pass on infertility to your kids. There's a King Jerome, who we think is a bad guy. He rules a city called Quashan, which ends with an apostrophe. What does that apostrophe do? Yeah! Adrina's friend, Guardsman Emil, rides a special extra-fast black horse named Ebony Lightning. There's a city called Alderaan, We go back to Vilmos. He has an out-of-body experience, and a mysterious voice calls it non-corporeal stasis, which is a fairly sci-fi bit of jargon for our high fantasy story. Fuck it, you know what? Nothing's happening. Or rather, things are happening, but not in any apparent order or logic. You know what? Let me just pull out some of my favorite quotes. "Running is pointless," Brion said. Yeah, because they're in boats at this point. Also, I wonder if Stanek has a friend named Brian, who he was like, I want to put this guy in my fantasy novel, but how do I make his name fantastical? As it is, Brion is something I don't think I've ever encountered. Aerith and Bob in a single name.
"Draw the energy into you, but slowly. Only build the power that you need," instructed Zith.
By the way, this is Zith. Vilmos draws the power in slowly and says, "I can feel it!" Adrina regarded Father Jacob with serious eyes. "Are you patronizing me?" People have gotten on my case about my use of ironic in some of my episodes, but at least I'm not Stanek, in whose writing, an increased downpour ironically washed the muck away. A few chapters on, we're in Quashan, apostrophe, where we meet Chancellor Von Te and Sergeant Danielle, apostrophe. So presumably Stanek has another friend named Daniel.
"The attack begins," said Captain Mikal. His hand returned to Jacob's shoulder, was again trying to crush bone.
Has anyone really been as far even as decided to use even go want to do look more like?
Now the sun is virgining?
In my favorite insane Stanek passage, in the second book, Vilmos leaves the care of his mentor Zith for a day and goes out into an unfamiliar city where he meets an adult man, and we get this passage.
"Don't worry, your secret is safe with me," said the man, grinning as he tugged at the stubble on his chin. "I'm not supposed to be here either. Maybe we can both do the thing we're not supposed to be doing together."
This man takes Vilmos to a tent where people are jousting and fencing. They watch some fights and have a good time. Then Vilmos reunites with Zith, who was fine with Vilmos going out on his own adventures from time to time, and that's all that happens in that chapter. Nothing ominous follows this unfamiliar adult man telling a child, "Maybe we can both do the thing we're not supposed to be doing together." Later on, in completely unrelated circumstances, Vilmos, one of our two main characters, dies, and it's off-screen and so obliquely hinted at that you don't realize it's happened until several chapters on, someone says outright that Vilmos is dead, and you have to go back and make sure that's not a typo. All right, that's Stanek's fantasy series. How is his sci-fi? Let's take a dip into Stanek's many-titled dystopian epic, This Mortal Coil, After the Machines, Episode 1, Awakening. There are no complete in-depth chapter-by-chapter reviews of this, like Conjugal Felicity did for Ruin Mist, so here I'm going it alone. It's free on Kindle, into the hands of fate. So we've got an epigraph, handily labeled epigraph, which I don't think I've ever seen before. We see here that Robert Stanek pretends to care about AI alignment when there's money involved, just like Sam Altman. We start with a long preamble. Here Stanek is telling rather than showing, introducing an unreliable narrator account of how the machines may have taken over. Our first-person narrator, we're in teen dystopia territory, so we gotta have a first-person narrator, throws a bunch of character names at us. Matthew remembers, quote, "when we drove the automobiles, flew on the airplanes, and rode on cars behind the locomotives," a not particularly brilliant sentence that Stanek was clearly quite proud of because it reappears word for word on just the next page. Books don't lie, but could books lie? Stop talking in circles and get to the plot already. We get into a second chapter. No plot yet. Still more of this hemming and hawing. The past is the present. The present is the past. According to this shirt I saw at my college dining hall in Beijing a couple years ago, the future is in the past. Okay. The plot of After the Machines seems to be this. There's a bunch of cool, rugged teenagers with names that are places in America and or models of SUV. Sierra, Austin, Dakota. They live in a place called Central, which I think is an underground bunker but doesn't get described well enough for me to be sure. This seems to be an unfamiliar location that they're just discovering, but where they lived before this is unclear. Outside, in a featureless wasteland that also seems to be new to them, they encounter some driverless trucks.
The trucks were so close together they looked like one long train, but I knew what I saw wasn't a train. Luke took me to the place where the trains ran once. I saw the difference and knew then that convoys weren't trains. Say what you want about Robert Stanek, he sure wants people to know he knows about all the different modes of transportation. The cool, rugged teenagers have books that they can't really read, which are important, but we never learn why. Our narrator is named Sadies, short for Mercedes. Actually, I think most of these characters are deliberately meant to be named after car brands. There's a character named Jetta, too. Why is Stanek clumsily trying to make transportation a leitmotif? Yeah. Anyway, Sadies has an important secret that she can't reveal to the rest of her posse, but she never reveals it to us either. She just internal monologues about how big a deal it is. She teaches Sierra to read. Man, woman, person, camera, TV. What the fuck is with the transportation terminology? Sadies and Sierra raid one of the convoys of driverless trucks. The trucks seem to be carrying human slaves, who I think are jacked into the Matrix or something very similar. The book and the secret are relevant somehow, but it's not clear how. And they take this newly freed human, Celeste, back to Central. There are four laws in Central, which are phrased like Asimov's three laws, but otherwise have nothing to do with them. If this book had come out now, I'd think that it is in fact written by an AI, of course, who would understand from its training data that stories about rogue AI often have a specific set of laws in them, but wouldn't really get the gist of the laws themselves. It would just go, this is a trope, must include nod to this trope. But this came out in 2014. Stanek wrote this himself. We meet Matthew, who is the leader of Central, and seems to be something of a cult leader. Sadies and a few other teens go out into the wilderness and find the ruins of New York. They point out the Statue of Liberty. You bastards, you blew it up. From the top of, I think, the ruined Empire State Building, they could almost see to where Central is. So, these teens live in a featureless post-apocalyptic wasteland that's not too far from New York City. Now, to that information, I'm supposed to say, okay, they live in New Jersey. But that's too tired a joke. I'm gonna say they live in Syracuse. We learned that, yeah, Matthew is a cult leader. We can't trust him. He might have played a role in the disappearance of the previous leader, Luke, and he's hiding some knowledge from the rest of the characters that has to do with his book. And you know what? An all-important book with earth-shattering secrets in it that was being withheld from the main characters by a cult leader-adjacent figure, that was a thing in Vilmos' plot arc in Ruined Mist. So Stanek is recycling his own tropes here. And despite the gospel-inflected names Luke and Matthew, like, I think that is intentional, but there doesn't seem to be an overall Christian message in any of Stanek's books. Our heroes escape from Central and jump on a white truck, which is different from a gray truck for some reason that might be important later. The first book, which can be fully read and not skimmed in about half an hour, ends with the main characters seemingly jacking into the Matrix on board one of the trucks. For reasons I can't grasp. I'll be charitable and say that there are faint hints of a good, if tropey, plot under all this philosophizing and not explaining. I do want to read the later books in the hope that some of this will be explained, but I'm not going to, because I know what Stanek's strategy is. Release the books in short, bite-sized chunks, just a few chapters for the price of a full novel, and explain almost nothing to keep the readers buying the next books, hooked on the chance of further revelations. Which I'm guessing won't happen, or will take place so thoroughly in the background that the reader won't have a clue at what's going on. It's been over a decade since Conjugal Felicity put out The Life and Lies of Robert Stanek, and Stanek had already been at it for at least a decade by that point. There are elected officials younger than some of the Ruined Mist books. Stanek is still around, and as far as I can tell, still grifting. He has numerous websites. You look up Robert Stanek and the whole first page of Google results consists of his different websites, some under the name William Stanek. He's got two Twitter accounts, William Stanek and Robert Stanek, both of which have blue checks, of course, and both of them post the exact same things. I follow them both, since I don't remember when, because I've wanted to make this video for a good long time. But the Robert Stanek one follows me! Which I just discovered a couple days ago while I was writing this script. Okay, this is my first episode about someone who I'm social media mutuals with, I guess. Maybe John Brinkley will give me a follow next. He'd have had a blue check if he was around today. Stanek may have finally given up on Ruined Mist, considering that high fantasy isn't the top-selling genre anymore. It'll come back into style, everything that dies someday comes back and all, but now he mostly posts about his Bugville Critters books,
and his websites no longer announce him first and foremost as the author of Ruin Mist. It seems he most wants to be known as an author of inane kids' books. That's certainly easy to crank out a lot of. He made a last attempt at repackaging the Ruin Mist series sometime around COVID, the book's fifth re-release with new titles, now trying to claim that they're part of something called the 100 Worlds universe, since I guess shared multiverses were the hot new thing in popular fiction around then. Stanek's new claim, on most of his websites, is that he's sold 20 million books, which is a bit more believable than the hundreds of millions he used to claim, though still way, way off. I was able to find a claim as recent as June 2020 that he had made $200 million in book sales. Also, check out what Stanek's talking about here. He got really into the Black Lives Matter and Stop Asian Hate movements in 2020, now claiming that the reason he self-publishes, despite being such a successful author, is because mainstream publishers are racist. He continues to try to tie himself to popular best-selling authors. According to this undated but I think recent blog post, he met J.K. Rowling 2 years before Harry Potter and gave her life advice. In 2020, he reached for a bit more of a deep cut, claiming to have personally known and been mentored by Wallace Stegner, a Pulitzer-winning author of Westerns who died in 1993. Wonder if any of Stegner's relatives are around to fact-check this. Beverly Cleary was apparently a family friend too. Stanek published this blog post right after Cleary died in 2021 at the remarkable age of 104. Cleary lived and set her books in Portland, Oregon. I live in Eugene, and I too make being from Oregon my entire personality. But I sure was surprised to see Stanek write this! Maybe this is true, maybe it's not. Weird thing to lie about if it's false, but Stanek does lie about weird things. If true, this is the second Tor's Cabinet episode where I've begun investigating a strange, intriguing person, and after already committing to the episode and doing tons of research, I've discovered that, oh! They used to live here in Eugene! Around 2021, someone claiming to be a child of Stanek took over his blogs for a minute. For a little bit, I believed this might mean Stanek was doing a James Somerton and faking his death to see if the haters would repent, since a lot of these posts had a vibe that seemed kind of like they were eulogizing Stanek, but he was back before long. This post did claim he had retired from writing, but was planning a comeback. Stanek is now trying his hand at art. If he drew the illustrations in the Ruin Mist books, he certainly is a better artist than a writer. It's not great, but I for sure couldn't do that. All of his websites describe him as a writer and an artist, sometimes an artist first. He says he runs something called World Galleries, which returns no results. Pages for his art only return Ruin Mist and Bugville Critters related pictures, which are cartoonish, digitally drawn but clearly not AI, and clearly not great art either. Stanek is also now trying his hand at the leadership course grift, which I respect because, well, that's an easy grift, certainly easier than anything else he's done, but even now he doesn't seem to be promoting his lifestyle guides nearly as aggressively as he promotes Bugville Critters. He claims to have a daughter with Down syndrome, which I'm pretty sure is true and, you know, humanizes the man a little, but just a little. I don't see a problem with sharing this, because Stanek sure as shit does not see a problem with him sharing this, and the way he promotes his blog about his disabled daughter is just uncomfortably similar to the way he talks about all his other bids at stardom. I can picture him saying, if I can't get famous for my fantasy novels, or my sci-fi novels, or my toddler picture books, I'll get famous for my daughter's disability. Remember that purported comeback Stanek teased? Well, he's back! Introducing Robert Stanek's first new fiction in nearly a decade! Since I'm sure people have already commented, how long is it gonna take for Stanek to discover AI, I think here's our answer. Historical fiction is a genre Stanek hasn't attempted until now, one that I've heard LLMs are especially good at, and the obviously AI-generated cover doesn't bode well for what's inside. He's put out 4 works of historical fiction in the past few months, of which the other 3 are set in small-town America at various points in the 20th century. You can read a sample of The Lights of Paris on Amazon without buying it, which also strikes me as an admission that it's AI. If any of Stanek's previous books offered that, people would just look at the first page and realize he's a terrible writer. You know, that he's willing to say, look at these books, look inside, and then buy it, I think suggests that he is more confident than he's been in the past. This is also just not Robert Stanek's writing style. This is machine-generated glibness. And you know I'm more favorable toward creatives using AI than most of you would be, but if Stanek is doing this, after years of actually writing novels, it shows that he cares more about his elaborate fraud schemes than his writing itself. What passion he once had is gone. How does Stanek respond to all the people documenting his shenanigans? The narrative Stanek chose to promote, as soon as people cottoned onto his scheme, was that he was getting too successful as an indie author and the big publishers were out to get him. If you've read something attacking Robert Stanek, that's why, so say his many blogs. He shows that you can be self-published and still sell millions, apparently, and the publishing giants are terrified. Here he takes a victory lap, the indie author who took on the giants and won. And in a sense, it certainly seems like he did win. If you look up either William Stanek or Robert Stanek right now, the first whole page of Google results will be his websites asserting he's a best-selling author. That's why he has so many websites, to flood the zone so that people coming across his books on Amazon don't find the blog posts picking apart his scams when they Google his name. The biggest, most informative takedown of Stanek, the Conjugal Felicity blog, is now off the internet, so now all you can find on the surface web about Stanek's grifts are a bunch of rumors on ancient writing forums. I don't know why Conjugal Felicity is gone. Most likely the person behind it just lost interest. But in Stanek's golden years, he was known to impersonate a lawyer, a specific lawyer who practiced in the Seattle area in the 2000s, and I certainly hope Conjugal Felicity didn't fold because of a legal threat from Stanek. I won't do that. If Stanek wants to sue me for libel, he can go ahead. Truth is the ultimate defense. Maybe he thinks he can threaten to sue me anyway, and I'll have to hire a lawyer and fight the legal fees, and I don't have the money to do that, so he'll assume I'll have to give in. I won't. I'll self-represent if need be. My case is strong enough. Come at me, William Robert Stanek. Put yourself on trial by suing me. Statute of limitations still hasn't closed on all that criminal impersonation. Or maybe I won't be quite so belligerent. How much money has Stanek made from all the effort he's put into his grifts? Probably not that much. We know it's not his day job. We know none of his books have sold well. The number of people who've been duped by all the fake Amazon reviews, when those were up, probably numbered in the mid-double digits. The most I can imagine Stanek ever earning from his fiction would total to, like, getting takeout for the family a couple times a year. So, is he in it for the money at all? Maybe writing fiction used to be his hobby, but now promoting his fiction is clearly his hobby. It's definitely more important and gets more effort put into it than the books, especially now that he's cranking them out with AI. What if this is literally just his hobby? Some men devote years to building model train layouts. Others build other dioramas of a fake world. So, Mr. Stanek, I'm talking directly to you now. If you want to come on this show and come clean about everything, it'll be the best career choice you could ever make. People will respect you. Do you remember the last time you felt like you had the public's respect? Your books will probably even start selling more. You're never gonna be a world-famous author. And that's fine. Being an author is common. There are plenty of people who have created elaborate high fantasy worlds. There's nobody I'm aware of who's created an elaborate fantasy world quite like this. Let yourself be known for this, Stanek. What can I say? People love a con man. Catch Me If You Can, The Talented Mr. Ripley, Can You Ever Forgive Me? I'd watch a movie about you. You know what they say? No publicity is bad publicity. I'm here in the Pacific Northwest, not too far from you. You come here, I'll go there. Either works. You know how to find me. Or sue me, or dox me, or something. You can do that too. But you'd be throwing away a good opportunity. You, William Robert Stanek, are a brilliant and unique artist and storyteller. Just not in the way you think.
Break your brain.